Hello and welcome to the Recon Rod. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And after a little post-Giro recovery, we are back in action to build up our form for the Tour de France with the biggest one-week race, the biggest tune-up race on the cycling calendar, which would, of course, be the Critérium du Dauphiné. Although, I say building up our form, I feel like in the grand scheme of things, we're coming out of the Giro in pretty strong form. We did, after all, correctly predict the winner.
Just three weeks ago. Yeah, before we changed our mind twice.
Yeah. But, you know, it all comes out in the wash. We did fine. We ended up picking the winner, so I'm going to completely forget that we decided to go away from our original pick in the middle of the race. I said that this is the biggest tune-up race for the Tour de France. I think that's what this race lives for. That's what this race exists for. It's a huge deal because of the Tour, because it's close to the Tour. It's an ASO event. And that's what makes this such an exciting race, is the number of riders here of high caliber who are in good shape, you would expect, because of the impending Tour de France.
It's also run by the same organization as the Tour, so in many respects, it's kind of on welfare that is collected from the Tour de France. It's certainly a bigger production, and I guess a better. In terms of actually putting on the event, the ASO does a great job, so it is a better production because of the Tour de France. But at the same time, I think it kind of, I don't know. I think it makes this a race that no one is going to independently target, although I think more riders should.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. It also is a race that, to me, doesn't really have its own character. Like, I think of a race like the Tour Down Under, your favorite World Tour race, or the Volta a Catalunya, which are very much, they have their own identities. And I don't think the Dauphiné quite has that. The Dauphiné just has the identity of being a tune-up race. All that said, it is quite a tune-up race, and the level of competition is extremely high. I think there's sort of a circular relationship there, though, some kind of circular logic, because the level of competition is high because it's the biggest race before the Tour, and all of the stars want to be racing against all the other top stars. And so they pick this race because all the other top stars are here. And I guess if they were all to sort of go over to the Tour de Suisse en masse, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't just stay there, but they're racing at the Dauphiné these days, and so that's where they are. They're not going to the Tour de Suisse, and until something pushes them in that direction, you know, the most of the big names are going to be here at the Dauphiné, I think.
I've always viewed the bit, like, I get where a lot of people come from with the cycling should have the big names race against the big names more often. But I remember back during the Armstrong years, there was a big uphill time trial, maybe on Vantu. And all the big, you know, Mayo was there, Hamilton was there. This was back before everybody got caught for doping. And there was one day where Armstrong just, like, casually rode this uphill time trial, like, finished 2 minutes down. It was like, oh, I had a bad day. When pretty clearly he kind of phoned it in that day to not really show the other strong guys what he was capable of or what he was planning to do at the Tour. And I think in a race like this, you aren't going to see a really big name risk the future of his season going super deep on a really hard day. And I think that takes away from the race.
Yeah, that makes sense. Hopefully we don't see too much of that this year. And I do think, you know, I think riders like to win this race. They're not going to throw their chances at the Tour.
Well, like Andrew Tolansky wins this race. It's awesome. He's super stoked. It was the year that he won was a great race. It was not a Tour tune-up. I mean, it's always a Tour tune-up, but it didn't play out like a mini Tour de France. You had kind of those top names sort of marking each other out of the race, almost like refusing to chase as this big group got a huge advantage. And I think a guy like TJ Van Garderen could build his season around coming in the Dauphiné and really tearing the race apart and making it unconventional. And I don't think you're ever going to see that because his focus is going to be next month.
Right. Yeah. All right. So we have hinted at the start list. Let's talk about the route before we get too deep into the start list. And we'll see how this year's route plays into the upcoming Tour de France. I think it's sort of an unconventional Dauphiné route. So the route of the Critérium du Dauphiné this year, at least in terms of the general classification, I think it's going to be all about the climbers. There is a time trial, but it's pretty climber-centric.
It is, you know, the fastball of uphill TTs. This is right down the middle. It's just under 4K, average just under 10%. It's, yeah, I mean, the race could be decided the first day, honestly. Yeah, there's going to be climbing later on, but, you know, if somebody finishes this stage with a minute advantage, it's kind of ball game.
This is really a wacky way to start a race. I mean, less than 4 kilometers, but nearly 10%. It's just kind of like your local Cat 3 hill climb. And it's going to be a huge decider, I think, in the Dauphiné. We're going to see probably several big names, I would imagine, who aren't going to cut it and are going to kind of see their GC bid fall apart right away. And very quickly, we're gonna know who the big contenders are in this race after this prologue. And then we're going to get into some less challenging stages to give us a little break from the excitement. Stage one, after, again, the prologue, so officially stage one would be, let's say, a chill day. It's probably a sprinter-friendly day. There's some early Cat 4s. There's 4 Category 4 climbs, but nothing really to speak of in terms of challenges topographically, that is, on the way to the finish. Stage two, you know, again, I don't see this having a huge GC impact, but there is an uphill finish. So I think most of the big GC names will be there, but I do wonder what kind of impact it's going to have in the actual overall, because the final climb is a Cat 3, comes right after a Cat 2. But, you know, if you did well in the prologue, you'll probably do well here. Punchy day, maybe for a punchy rider, a Liège kind of rider.
It may be a Nervieux day as it goes through the city of Nervieux. Nervous?
Possibly, yeah.
No? Does that work? I don't know. I know, but I mean, it looks like the word nervous.
Yeah, it does look pretty close to that. We're going to go with that. All right, so stage three is another kind of chill day, maybe a breakaway day, because there's a Cat 2 climb about 20K from the finish that could put the sprinters out of contention. And we'll get to this in a bit, but there's not really a lot of sprinters here anyway, so I don't really see anybody pushing the pace for that one. This looks like a classic breakaway day to me. Stage four, once again, a stage for the sprinters, and I don't know, it's...
I would say this is the sprinteriest day.
Yeah, I'm a little curious of why do we have basically 4 stages in a row without any GC impact? After
building the suspense.
I guess, yeah.
Honestly, it could be a situation where one guy ends up in the lead and his team takes a lot of damage, kind of bringing the break back on all these days.
Or maybe one guy's in the lead, looks like he's a clear winner, and then he crashes on a descent, and somebody else takes the lead. You know, that could happen.
Into a snowbank, perhaps?
Possibly, yeah.
I don't know they were in snowbank terrain at this time of year. But yeah. It's possible.
Possibly. You know, they're up in the high mountains after this. Stage five, we finally get some climbs for real. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categorized climbs. The stage ends on a Cat 2 uphill finish. Not the hardest climb in the world, but I think after so many categorized climbs earlier in the day, it's going to at least see some gaps on the GC.
Yeah, I really like this one for the break. I think this is going to be a cool battle. I think there are so many stages early in the race with all these little climbs shoved into them that it could be a pretty cool KOM competition. Not that that is, you know, KOM at Dauphiné is a high profile thing, but it could be cool to watch.
It's not, but I will say for my part, I really like the non-general classifications at the 1 week races. I feel like they provide, they give you something to care about on the many days where there's not a whole lot of GC action. And I mean, the same is true for the Grand Tours. I kind of wish, for instance, that the King of the Mountains classification at the Giro got more coverage in the big media outlets, because it's something to pay attention to on these intermediate stages where nothing is happening, or even the mountain stages where the race kind of breaks down into 2 different races and you don't really have a whole lot of reason to care without a King of the Mountains classification about what's going on out front. But thanks to the King of the Mountains, you kind of do care. Is Damiano Cunego going to get this KOM, or is it going to go to Mikel Nieve? And that provides some kind of excitement on these longer, kind of more boring breakaway friendly days. So I do care about the 1 week minor jerseys.
I'm not saying it isn't cool. What I'm saying is it's not high profile.
It's not high profile. That's probably correct. But you know, Thomas DeGent is going to be up there and trying to get this minor jersey, high profile or not. Stage six, that's, I think, finally where we get to what we could call the queen stage, in that there are 5 categorized climbs, including an or category in the middle of the day, and then a Cat 1 finish. And I think this is probably where the race will be decided. because it's just a lot of climbing. It's not a very long day, 141 kilometers, so you'd expect it to be pretty fast. And I think these climbs are, or at least the finishing climb is pretty steady. So it could suit somebody who likes to churn out a, you know, high, steady pace. That kind of rider who maybe did well in the first stage. Stage 7 is the final stage of the race. So it's an 8-day race, in case you haven't been counting so far. Another climber-friendly day. It doesn't actually end on a really hard climb. It ends on a Cat 3, but it comes right after a Cat 1.
And this is the third consecutive stage with an uphill finish. We
That's right.
Mention.
And it kind of reminds me of some of the stages of the Giro, which had this sort of finish with a lesser climb right after a harder climb. And
which, as we all know from the Giro, makes things totally boring and not interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the Giro formula certainly worked out to make for one of the most exciting Giros, I don't know, that I can remember.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, so hopefully that we'll see that again here, where this sort of 1-2 punch of climbs at the end of these days will help make for an interesting race. The 8-day Dauphiné comes to an end here on stage 7 after 6 categorized climbs on the day and 151 kilometers, which is another pretty short stage. So I think we can expect to see some high speed stages at the end of this week long or week and change long race. But so there's no flat time trial. There's no, you know, up and down time trial. There's just an up time trial, and it's short. And other than that, it's just climbing and, you know, trying not to crash in the flat stages. So I think this one's going to go to a strong climber, which is probably how the tour's going to work out. Let's talk a little more about those riders who are going to be contending for the overall win. So let's talk about the GC contenders for the Critérium du Dauphiné 2016. I think we could start the conversation the same way we would start our Tour de France contender conversation, because three of, I would say, the big four Tour de France contenders, and really every single one of the top Tour de France contenders, except for maybe two guys, and I'm thinking of Nairo Quintana and TJ Van Garderen there, are here at the Dauphiné. And the three big ones, I would say, are Chris Froome, Alberto Contador, and Fabio Aru. And there's others as well. But the three big ones are those guys.
Although, you know, Nibali kind of made a case for putting himself back in there, which puts a little heat on Fabio Aru to, not that they're going to switch up their season plans, but, you know, he can't really have a bad time after.
He can't. Yeah, that's true. Because I think Nibali will stick to the plan. But if 2 weeks in and Aru's not doing so well and he didn't put up a good Dauphiné, then it wouldn't be at all surprising if Nibali suddenly started to be the GC leader.
But I mean, if Nibali finishes seventh and like wins two stages at the Giro, I'm a lot happier is Fabio Aru than I am right now. So
yeah,
but we'll see.
Oh,
we'll
sure,
see how
sure.
his legs go.
So Froome, though, I'll start with Froome. He's the 2-time winner here. He's a guy who, because he rides for Team Sky, I think that makes this race important, because every time Team Sky has won the Tour de France, of course, we're only talking about three times, but they've won the Dauphiné first. Wiggins did it. Froome has done it twice. He won the race last year. That makes him the defending champion. And he's a guy who, well, he does well in stage races. That's kind of obvious. He does well in stage races that take place in France when they're run by the ASO.
And they don't have cobbles.
That's true. Although, he did win last year's Tour de France.
It wasn't, and the cobbles last year weren't the same.
No, they weren't. That's true. But there were some.
There were some
cobbles. And also, I think one big thing about Chris Froome that I like to harp on every time I get a chance to talk about Chris Froome is that I think he is one of the world's top two or three best climbers. And I think a lot of people put him at like 5 or 6 because they underestimate his climbing ability and they try to find excuses as to why he's not the best or second or third best climber in the world. But he's won 2 Tours de France, I think, because of his climbing ability. And so, despite the fact that this Critérium du Dauphiné does not have any hard, flat time trials, I don't think that puts him at too much of a disadvantage. I think Chris Froome will be just fine on the climbs. He does well when climbing. That's something that he has done well at for a little while now. So, I like his chances here at the Dauphiné as the defending champ.
I agree with that assessment. And Alberto Contador is another guy who's really sort of known more for his climbing than his time trialing. And he will also like this parkour. He's finished no lower than third, I think, in a stage race this season and does not have a lot of racing days. So he's somebody who really, he's definitely at a point in his career where he knows where his strengths and his weaknesses are. And if someone is going to maybe not go all in because of July, I feel like he's going to be the guy. But that said, we saw him race a great Giro last year with pretty minimal team support. So it may be that, you know, he just feels good. And if this guy's got three dudes in a group of six on a mountain day, I don't think that's any reason for him not to try and attack.
Yeah. Fabio Arubi, the other guy we've mentioned, more so than Froome, more so than Contador. Arubi is a pure climber. Froome is a great time trialist, and Contador is a great time trialist as well, even though he's certainly known for his climbing more so than his time trialing. Arubi is very much a climber, and I think he, more than anybody, is going to like this route because he doesn't have to worry about a time trial. He only has to worry about going up, and that's something he's very good at. The team is okay. It's not the dominant team, I would say, that Astana often puts out there for a stage race, but it's certainly a strong team with Dario Cataldo, Diego Rosa, Luis Leon Sanchez, Paolo Tirolongo. These are strong riders. But at least in the team department, I have to say that Team Sky is far and away the strongest team at this race, because behind Chris Froome, you have none other than Sky's Mikel Landa, who was supposed to be their Giro leader before he got sick. You got Wout Poels, who won that Liège-Bastogne-Liège race. You got Mikov Kwiatkowski, who has won that world championship thing.
And that Amstel Gold thing.
And that Amstel Gold thing.
Oh, and a couple and other that, classics in there, too. A
couple other classics in there, too. It's just kind of ridiculous, the power they have. Oh, yeah, Sergio Henao also has been cleared to race, so he's here. One of the strongest climbers on the team. I mean, this is just a really great squad that they're bringing. And it's going to be so hard for anybody to knock Sky off the front of the peloton if Froome gets out to an early lead. And of all the teams who are going to be able to defend a lead, Sky, far and away, has the best chances there. So I think that puts Froome in a great position here. The question for me is, well, what if Sky says, hey, Mikel, you know, it's a bummer that you didn't win the Giro. Why don't we give you team leadership at the Dauphiné? I mean, I wouldn't put it past them. I would imagine that Froome is the leader, but I wouldn't surprise me, really, if Landa comes away as a leader or...
Well, that's the thing with Sky is, like, they're going to make that call. If Froome is feeling, like, if Froome has a cold or if Froome is slightly dehydrated, they're not going to put his season at risk for the Dauphiné. And they've got a team that can absolutely, you know, at the drop of a hat, switch plans. So.
Right. We saw that at Liège. It was like Kwiatkowski was the big name in the Ardennes. And then Sky won their first ever Monument Classic without Poels. Just kind of, oh, okay. That's what happened now. Beyond those three, I do think there are a couple other big names here that we have to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, the great French hope, Thibaut Pinot. He's still pretty young, 26, already two tour stages, a tour podium. And honestly, for a team that has only four riders in its entire roster from countries where French is not a native language, like, FDJ has really kind of turned itself from being just another French team into a real world tour squad. They've got guys who can go to the front and kind of control the pace. We've seen them do it from time to time. Like, I don't know if Thibaut Pinot wins this uphill time trial, which to me seems unlikely. I think FDJ is a team that could actually defend that lead for the rest of the race as effectively as a team like Sky or Tinkoff.
Yeah, FDJ, obviously they have Pinot, who's a big name, but Reichenbach, Sebastian Reichenbach and Steve Morbito are big engines. Arthur Vichot, another big engine. They have a good squad here, and Pinot has been so hot this season. I mean, he's a guy who has suddenly become a strong time trialist, and he hasn't given up, it doesn't appear, any of his climbing ability, so gotta like his chances on home roads here in France. Another guy who really does well in the one-week races is Richie Port. And the big question for Port, I think, is... is this the year that he translates that one-week stage racing ability into three-week stage racing ability?
Conversely, does he change his career focus to one-week stage races? Because he could be fantastic at it.
Yeah, if that's all he focused on, if he became a Rui Costa type or a Simon Spilak type, then he could be the greatest one-week racer ever. He's just so good at it. So, yeah, everybody's wondering, well, what's he going to do in the Tour? But this isn't the Tour. This is the Dauphiné, and that means that Port has to be right up there with the very top contenders because he's so hard to beat in a one-week race. He happens to have Rowan Dennis at his side here, another potential contender. BMC always brings a strong start list. Ben Herman's as well. So I like their chances. I like Port's chances. They said TJ, or they are sending TJ Van Garderen to the Tour de Suisse, kind of splitting up their two GC leaders. So yeah, I think it's going to be all about Port here. Maybe on the flip side of that coin is Joaquim Rodriguez. He's a guy who, instead of wondering, you know, is this the year he finally turns it on, I'm kind of wondering, does he still have any in the tank this year? He's a guy who has done very well in one-week races in the past, and he's done well in the Tour in the past. He's been on the podium, but this has not been nearly as strong a year as he's had before. I mean, Alejandro Valverde, right up there in a similar age group, continues to do very well. I mean, he's just coming off a podium at the Giro d'Italia. Joaquim Rodriguez was fifth in Pais Vasco. That's pretty much the best he's done in a race this season. And yeah, we just haven't seen quite the same season from him this year as we saw last year, where he won Pais Vasco. He was third in Liège. So I don't really know what to expect from Rodriguez, but if there were ever a Dauphiné that he could do well in, it's this one, which he doesn't have to worry about flat time trials. So that's kind of his thing, I think, these climbs.
Another strong French contender is Ajay Deserre's Romain Bardet. Looking to shake off a pretty forgettable Tour of Romandie. Earlier in the season, he had pretty consistent top tens in stage races and just kind of looked not all there at Romandie. I kind of have question marks around his team, but Ajay Deserre as well has really kind of upped its game. Yeah, I don't know. He tends to do pretty well at ASO events. So we'll see.
So beyond those, higher end contenders, I guess we could call them, there are plenty of other names to keep an eye out for. Let's see. We got Bauke Mollema from Trek. Definitely going to be up there. This is the kind of race he tends to do well in. Louis Menches for Lampre Merida. Both Yates twins, if they're both there, depending on the situation with one of them. Not really sure how that's going.
Whichever Yates is are in attendance, will have a chance to do well.
Yeah. Lotto Soudal with Tony Gallopin. I wonder if he's going to be going for the GC. He tends to go for general classifications, even when it's, in my opinion, not the smartest idea in the world. But he always is good for a top 10, it seems. Movistar's got Danny Moreno and Dair Quintana, who I saw firsthand is quite a climber. He won the Tour de San Luis in a pretty impressive fashion, and maybe with a little bit of freedom here, he could go for something. Direct Energy with Tommy Vogler, maybe. I think his best days are in the past. Cannondale, though, has a couple of guys who could do well here. I think Pierre Roland's a big one, and at least for the general classification, you would imagine that the French rider would want to do well in his home race.
I've been expecting Pierre Roland to, like, show the big Cannondale turnaround kind of all season and haven't really seen it yet, which is a little disheartening. I really felt like it could be cool to kind of compare an organization like Cannondale to one like Europcar / Direct Energy. But it doesn't seem to be that hypothesis seems to be proving not true, at least so far.
Yeah, and if you were following Jay Vauders' Twitter, you would expect big things from Pierre Roland.
Vauders always plays up everybody.
He's talking a big game.
To be fair.
Yeah, that's true.
He was Alex Howe is second again at Nationals. And I was like, Alex Howe really didn't factor in this race until like the final 200 meters. And, you know, kind of, I don't want to say he deserved it, but the Cannondale really didn't play the tactics well, and Action did really well.
They're two riders who can't even drink yet. So
yeah, exactly. But
I think he probably is of the legal limit, but it's pretty close. Yeah. So I think that's what I've got in mind for contenders there. The start list also has plenty of stage hunters on it. Although for all the sprint stages here, the sprinting names are lacking, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not insulting.
I mean, you start with that uphill time trial and you have those three consecutive uphill finishes. You know, if you're a guy who is going to have to suffer all day to make a time cut, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, I guess. I think the sprinting conversation, I guess you got to start with Alexander Kristoff.
No, he's a classics rider now anyway, so I think we don't need to have him in there.
He's still pretty speedy. he was up there recently at the Tour of California. He won a stage at the Tour of California, which is pretty impressive. I mean,
it's, you know,
America,
it's a,
Tour. Yeah.
It's a different kind of sprinting. I think as Peter Sagan's success there shows, you can really, you can be a lot, there's just a lot less kind of negotiating and holding your place and a lot more of like, okay, I'm going to go fast from now until the finish line and
which
win.
Christoph does well.
Yes. Well, he's, yeah. I mean, he's a guy who like just ignored, like he's the 300 meter man, you know, like,
right. Yeah, that's what he does.
Sprint can't be long enough for him.
Nasser Bouhanni, another big name here. We haven't seen a whole lot from him yet this season, but he's probably one of the three other big names. And then John Degenkolb.
Yeah. I think it's really cool to see Degenkolb back. Like, kind of making it through Tour of California, suffering the whole way, but he got his nose into the top. He was in the mix, let's say, in the last two sprint stages, which is his finger permanently? Like, did they fuse the joint? What was the?
I know that he can't use his finger anymore to break or shift. He has to break and shift with his middle finger now, according to something that I read on Velo News. So that's a change.
as someone who shattered a bone in his pinky and spent most of the summer kind of rehabbing the reconstructed sort of bone in his pinky, it's pretty amazing to me to imagine getting into a sprint and performing well without an index finger. Like,
yeah,
the pinky was hard enough and it doesn't do anything. So I think it's really cool that he seemed to have adapted. He was never a tremendous group sprinter in the traditional Tour de France sense, but certainly a guy with a lot of power, a lot of speed, who can kind of convert it out of a smaller sprint or be great in one days. So, yeah, I'm just glad to see him back.
All right, so beyond those sprinting names, light list of sprinters there that we have, there are plenty of impressive stage hunter types who maybe fit more into the puncheur category or the rollier category. You've got Edvald Boasenhagen. You've got Danny Martin, Julian Alaphilippe, Mikhail Kwiatkowski. I mean, these are guys who could do really well on the kind of punchier stages, and there are a few. I'm looking at Tony Martin here, who's always good for a breakaway, and Nicky Terpstra, similar situation there.
I'm kind of curious to see how BMC uses Greg Van Avermaet with if they're going to be. I mean, they're obviously coming in with a GC focus, right? It's the Dauphiné, and I'm kind of curious what Van Avermaet's role in that is.
You know, there are some days that I think could suit him, and if I'm Van Avermaet after the lost classic season, I'm looking for every opportunity I have to take a victory this year. He won Torino, and it was huge, and it was probably one of the coolest things for Greg to do that, and then to come off of that victory into having such a disappointing classic season where he basically didn't even get to race in the big classics, that must have been so frustrating for him. I would expect that he's not going to willingly pass up any opportunity to take a stage win, so I'm hoping that that's going to motivate him to do well here, or at least to try to do well here in this race. So that's the kind of guy we're working with. We've got a lot of those classics type guys who could do well. Tom Jutta-Slagter as well, kind of punchy rider. Ian Stannard is here. So keep an eye out on those breakaway friendly days, because that's, I think, the kind of stage where we're really going to see them doing their thing. Okay, so GC guys, sprinters, rolliers, punchers. Let's talk about the guys that we think are favored to actually win the race. We can do our podiums here and see if we can't nail a winner like we did at the Giro. I can go first. I see Chris Froome as the race favorite. I think coming in as a defending champion on a parkour that suits him well enough with a team that looks far and away the best, it's hard for me not to pick Chris Froome. We haven't seen a whole lot from Chris Froome this year. He didn't really contend at the overall at the Tour de Romandie, but he was certainly up there as a stage hunter, winning a stage. And I would imagine he's in better shape now with the Tour around the corner. So that's my winner pick. I'll put Fabio Aru in second because I think Aru is going to be motivated to do really well here, and I think the course suits him very well. And I'll be kind of boring and put Alberto Contador, the other guy that I put in my top three, in third place. He always does well here, even though he's never won. He's been second twice, and he's been third as well. So three podiums would suggest that he wants to do well. I mean, that's something that he comes here hoping to do well. So I would expect those three guys to be up there. It's hard for me to leave Richie Porte off the podium in a one-week race, and Pino as well, given how well he's done so far. But it's also hard for me not to name those three guys as my top three.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mostly in alignment with you. I also like Froome for the win, just because unless there's something kind of wrong with Chris Froome, like his big bonky day when Andrew Talansky won. He's really done well at this event, and I think the course this year plays very much into his favor, even without a flat time trial. I think the uphill time trial is just as good for him. I like Contador in second. I think he's going to be stronger at this race than he shows. I don't think, like I said, at his point in his career, he's not looking to win Dauphiné. He's looking to win the Tour de France. So I think he'll ride with the leaders, but I don't think he'll try to blow the race apart or come away with a victory. And then I like Richie Porte in third. BMC is a good team, and Richie Porte is good at 1 week stage races. I think he should really kind of focus on 1 week stage races instead of maybe being their guy for Grand Tours, since he kind of has a proven record of having about 12 good Grand Tour days in him. That's not to be mean-spirited. Like, I couldn't,
true. Yeah.
You know, to be at it leading or at the top of a GC race for, you know, more than 2 weeks is pretty unique. But I don't know that he seems to show some sort of weakness for sticking with it at top form for all three. And races like this, you know, I think would be maybe a bigger deal if people fought for them the way they fight for the classics.
Yeah,
you
know, I agree.
And you don't see Tom Bonin trying to win the Tour.
Yeah. All right, so those are our winner picks for the Dauphiné. Enjoy the racing, which begins on Sunday. And check back soon for our Tour de Suisse pre-race show, because that is right around the corner as well. The other tune-up race. And there are some other big names that are going to be at the Tour de Suisse. Peter Sagan's going to be at the Tour de Suisse. TJ Van Garderen's going to be at the Tour de Suisse. So that should be pretty exciting. That's almost here as well. And, of course, so is the Tour de France. So it's a pretty exciting time of year in the cycling world. But until we get to all that, enjoy the Critérium du Dauphiné. This has been the Recon Ride Podcast. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.